Hello and welcome to another edition of Inside the Burrow, the FAU podcast for and by Owls fans. Ah, Kirk, it's good to be back with a winning record. Oh, I love to see it. The FAU home winning streak, 10 games, double digits, baby. Let's go.
I mean, I feel like there's nothing. Has there ever been anything like this? I mean, I don't think there has, at least not in my time at FAU. So it's pretty awesome to actually see a win streak like this. It's, you know, unheard of, to be honest. When was the last loss?
It was the Marshall game in 2019. Yeah, I know. Oh, we're not going to. Yeah, we're not going to say the M word here. No way, no shot.
Unless it's talking about them blowing the game to East Carolina. We can mention that, maybe.
Oh, there it is. There it is. We've got some spice coming early in this episode. And don't worry, guys. We're going to be talking a little about Conference USA in a bit later on, because you guys know I really want to touch on that Marshall choke job to ECU. But that being said, you know, Kirk, you're talking about coming to FAU Stadium, Howard Schillerberger Field, 10 straight wins. It's nice to kind of expect that. It's interesting. I always expect two things now when it comes to Owls football: a rain delay and a win in paradise. There you go. So what are your quick takeaways from the pretty second half, at least, impressive win against the Fordham Rams?
You know, first, I just want to give a quick shout out, because speaking of that rain delay, just the students who stuck around that whole hour rain delay, none of them left. So they had a good turnout, and then all of them stuck around. So it seemed like a nice change of pace, you know, because I feel like we never saw that in the past. But, you know, things that kind of stuck out to me, obviously it was a good win. I mean, it was the most feeling great about a 29-point victory I've ever seen, or 31-point victory I've ever seen. It just, the game lacked, seemed like, crispness and, you know, fluidity, I would say. You know, just a lot of sloppy play. The offense, you know, had its moments, but, you know, as good as it was, you know, you had a few of those. I mean, Nikosi should have had 250 yards passing and three touchdowns in the first quarter and a half. So it was just, you know, it was upsetting to see some of those big plays. And so those are the, you know, the main things I noticed. And, you know, obviously you had the, what was it, three and outs to start the game. So also, you know, stuff you'd like to see change, because, you know, once you face a team, you know, like upcoming, like Air Force, you're getting a conference play, that eventually could bite you, you know, kind of bite you hard. So those are the kind of the things that stood out to me.
Yeah. I like your three and out point, because four straight three and outs between the two the sides to start the game, and I was about to fall asleep. You know, it was rough. But, you know, something that does concern me for sure is, you know, we saw this against Georgia Southern as well. The offense starts so slowly. I mean, they don't really get going until the second half, which, you know, okay, fine. I guess better turn it on late than never. And I don't think this is going to be a long time issue, because we saw the three drops like in the first few drives, which all should have been touchdowns in the first quarter. I mean, come on. But that being said, I am a bit worried about the slow start, especially when it comes to a team like Air Force. No way we can get away with that when you know they're just going to kill clock with their option style offense. So that being said, Kirk, I want to pose a question to you. Are you concerned about how slow this offense really gets into gear when it comes to game time?
I mean, probably more so this upcoming week than most weeks, because, I mean, you're going to see a team like with Air Force, who obviously we saw you can't waste those, because you have so many, when you're facing a triple option team, you only have so many chances, so you can't waste any opportunity you'll have. So, you know, every opportunity, even if it's to drive down the field, you can't afford a three and out, because one, your defense will continue to get tired, and, you know, they're going to hold that type of possession where you'll see less and less possession. So everything is, you know, matters that much more against a triple option team.
Absolutely. The drives are at a premium, no doubt about it. I do think it is good that we did see some option football. Well, albeit slightly different. Georgia Southern likes to run it out of the spread, pistol, shotgun. Air Force, out of the three military academies, they will spread the field out more than Navy and Army will, and very on brand. They will throw the football more. The Air Force Academy, you know, using the air,
have to,
compared to Navy and West Point. And that being said, they have a decent quarterback. Hazeek Daniels, he went 6 for 12, 182 yards, including a touchdown and an interception against Utah State. What a game, man. What a game that was. A name to watch out for Air Force was Emmanuel Mikel. 11 carries, 133 yards on 11 carries. He's nuts. That's incredible. But you know how it is with the option teams. I mean, fullback, H-back, running back, it doesn't matter. If they find a hole, they're going to exploit it, and they're going to get 8, 9, 10 yards. And it's just so, so killer. So I want to pose this question to you, Kirk. Do you think it's beneficial that we've already seen a little bit of the option already this year?
I mean, you would have to think so. It can't hurt because I feel like a lot of times these triple option games that we've had in past years, it kind of just sneaks up on you out of nowhere. So, I mean, like you said, it is Georgia Southern runs a little bit different of a spread formation on the triple option. So it's a little variation of it, but, you know, still at this core triple option is triple option football. You know, it's knowing your assignment on the field, not trying to be the hero on every play. So if they have that, the defense has that understanding going into the game, which maybe didn't against Georgia Southern to start it off, because they did Georgia Southern had that initial, drive to start the game that, you know, they went right down the field. So maybe, you know, they can work out those kinks that first game, whereas maybe they can go straight into this game. So, I mean, that would be my hope. But, you know, you never know, because it is a different team. It's going to be a better version of the triple option. Academy teams, we always say, are more disciplined for obvious reasons. So you're going to see, a different facet of it this round.
One thing that I was definitely worried about, this game was originally scheduled for 9/11. Could you imagine playing the Air Force Academy on the 20th anniversary of 9/11? I mean, we might as well just go, lose, just fly back. Just get handed an L. It would have been like, really get off the plane.
Yeah, it would have been like Western Kentucky a couple weeks ago when they were at, I think, Army that day.
And Army
never
right.
stood a chance. Yeah, Western Kentucky never stood a chance that day.
I mean, and Western Kentucky put up points against that solid Army defense. We're going to talk about Zappy so much.
Yeah.
They played well, but it's just come on. The military academy is on a day like that. No shot. That's just the way it is. So I'm happy that things got moved around and they played Navy instead of us. That being said, something that still worries me is going to be the elevation. I talked to Coach Taggart today during the media presser, and I said, this is the first question out of the gate. I said, Coach, this is an elephant in the room. At least I think so. And it's a 4,000 foot elephant. And give me that elevation. These are Florida boys that are used to the tropical climate at sea level, who are going to go up to a place where they're going to do one sprint and they're going to be completely out of breath. What can you do to kind of get the guys ready for that? What can you do once you get to Colorado Springs to help deal with it? And his response is interesting. It didn't seem like he put a lot of stock into the whole elevation play. And Kirk, you know, I know you're a soccer guy. I'm a soccer guy. So the one thing I immediately think of is when the U.S. national team goes to play at Azteca. One of the things they have to worry about, besides the fans, you know, throwing urine at you, and you know your fire alarms going off at your hotel at 5 a.m. in the morning, you know, the whole CONCACAF experience is the elevation, and how these really fit athletes that are world-class athletes are just completely gassed 15, 20 minutes in. And I'm thinking 18, 19, 20-year-olds from South Florida who've never seen snow, let alone a mountain going up there. I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm not as confident in Coach Taggart in that being more of media conversation than it is real life. I moved up to Asheville, North Carolina. For those that don't know, the highest peak east of the Mississippi is just an hour away. It's pretty hilly, not as hilly as San Francisco, but it's up there. And, you know, I get gassed. I've been living here for a little less than a year now. So I obviously I'm not, you know, a D1 athlete by any means, but do you think that's a good idea that he's kind of playing it down? I mean, I don't know, man.
I mean, I think from his perspective, it's probably good to play it down, because I guess, you know, you don't want to get into your own players' heads ahead of time, you know, because sometimes I feel like elevation could screw with your head as well. So I think from his perspective, it's probably good to play it down. So, you know, But I think it, from our perspective, it has to be somewhat of a concern because, like you said, I mean, you know, when you go to elevation, they always try to bring you up slowly with it because you can adapt to it. I mean, we're going literally from sea level to 4,000 or 5,000 feet. There's a difference there. I mean, there's a reason why sometimes players in, you know, Denver get held out of games if, you know, with certain health conditions, everything like that. So, I mean, there are some concerns about it. Ultimately, I don't think it should decide the game. I would hope not, but, you know, you never know. I mean, we're dealing with 19, 20 year old kids here. So, you know, anything's a curveball when it comes to college football. That's also what makes college football so unique and great compared to the NFL.
Absolutely. Yeah. These little intangibles actually matter. That was a great point about it being a mental thing. I never even thought about that aspect. So, you know, job well done. I think it is maybe trying to reassure his players in that sense, someone to put it in their mind, because thinking about it, it really wasn't that much of an issue against Wyoming, which has the highest elevation above sea level out of all FBS programs. To credit, when it comes to kind of building that elevation up, the U.S. national team, every single time before they go to Mexico City to play at Azteca, I think they train at Denver or
Salt Lake or
exactly something always leading up. They could be playing like in Honduras the week before, and they said, no, we have to fly back to Utah or something and get used to it and then go to Mexico City. So I think that's a pretty decent segue because, you know, speaking, this is going to be fun, guys, because speaking of long distances, I mean, time to address the real elephant in the room when it comes to college football, especially in the group of five, especially when it comes to FAU, conference realignment. Yes, you guys have been asking for it. Here it is. We don't know what the heck is going on. Okay, just take that in for a second. Take a deep breath. Everyone, relax. Take a couple steps away from the ledge. We don't know what's happening. We do know that FAU is well-liked, that FAU has positioned them well, ourselves well, in a good position for this round of realignment. Now, we do know that the American Conference, it seems like they're trying to go for the four Mountain West programs. It's going to be Boise State, San Diego State, Air Force Academy. That's ironic, right? And Colorado State. It seems like Boise and San Diego, they're saying no. There are some reports this morning, recording this Monday night, some reports this morning that they're saying no. They're holding out for a Big 12 invite. Personally, I think Boise will get it. I don't think San Diego will. It doesn't make any sense to pay two conference payouts in 4 or 5 years. That's going to kill them. So that being said, that leaves Colorado State and Air Force. And then they had a report last week about UAB. I think they're a lock. And then UTSA, FAU, see if there's any room. Kirk, what do you think? Do you think UAB is a lock? Do you think any of the Mountain West schools are going to go? How do you think FAU has positioned ourselves? Should I find a bridge to jump off of? I don't know. What, help me out here, because I frankly am freaking out as well.
I mean, yeah, I think that's kind of the scariest part is, you know, just the unknown of it all, because, you know, my biggest concern right now is if the American does pass on us, you know, where does that leave the program? I mean, Conference USA is just going to be a dumpster fire when this is all said and done in a couple months. So the last thing I want to do is be left whatever's left with Conference USA. You know, you also hear some of those reports that, you know, some of the older Conference USA programs are looking to go jump back into the Sun Belt. So, you know, I'd be curious to know. I mean, I trust our leadership. I mean, you know, I think that's the one thing we have going for us with Brian White, and is just, we have the leadership who knows, who wants to achieve greatness for the football program. But if stuff does go wrong, it's just, where does that leave us? What's the backup plan? Because that's the scary thing is, because it seems like the American preferably would go out west. So it's like, we kind of have to bank on some of those teams out west not wanting to jump into the American, which, you know, if we end up being second choices, I'll take it in this scenario. Yeah, I mean, it seems like UAB does seem to be a lock because it kind of, you know, they've done so, you know, since they've come back from when they canceled the program, you know, getting that, you know, the stadium opening up this year and the facilities they put forward. But it sounds pretty familiar to what FAU's done also too. So I think FAU's put in their best position we possibly could. I know some people are worried about, you know, the basketball arena and stuff like that, but I mean, let's be honest here. Football is king when it comes to all sports. So I think our football program has well positioned us, you know, from what Lane left us to, you know, bringing in another good name like Taggart, and so far as can kind of continue with the good football play and the, you know, the monetary donations we've got recently. So I think we're putting our bet. We pushed all our chips into the, you know, into the tables, the center of the table. So that's all you can ask for.
Yeah, that's all you can ask for, is that the leaders of the university, Brian White, President Kelly as well. I just have 110% confidence in them. Now, whether that means going to the American, whether that means holding out Conference USA, whatever that they kind of go with, I'm kind of content with. And I think that they've definitely proven that they deserve our confidence over the last 5-6 years, which have been the best in FAU football history as a fan, as alumni. You know what I mean? It hasn't been any better. It makes me wish that we were in school during those times, that's for sure.
Yeah,
no doubt about it. The whole, like, you're seeing some of the college town, small town Conference USA schools saying that they want to go to the Sun Belt. And, you know, we're talking about Marshall and Southern Miss here. You know, the ones that are very proud of their, you know, of beating Mississippi State in 1973, you know, congratulations. That's their pinnacle. That's their height. I don't see them really going anywhere. I'm not worried. Fact of the matter is, if we are in Conference USA with them, I think that's fine because we have already established a bit of a rivalry with them, especially with Marshall. Say what you want about them. I enjoy it. I love it. They're a very passionate fan base. They're a good team. They're a good program. That's good. That's good. But man, did I love watching them choke. 17-point lead with like, what, 10 minutes left?
Yeah, looking at my phone, seeing it's 31-21 or 38-21. And then 20 minutes later, looking at my phone and start laughing because I saw Marshall blew it in the fourth quarter. It was a great moment.
No doubt. And it's funny because the Marshall fans think that Doc Holliday was the choke artist, and they're thinking that Coach Huff is going to bring them to the promised land of a New Year's Six Bowl. And here they are still choking. And, you know, sometimes these things just happen that way. What do you know? So we'll see what happens with conference realignment. It is an ever evolving amoeba, if you will. You know, it's never going to be set in stone. It's never going to be solidified. That's just the life of the G5 program. I think the Sun Belt's going to maybe try and poach. They'll try to poach some CUSA schools. We'll see what happens. I think they'll poach some FCS schools. I think the Mountain West will add on a couple schools in 4 years. I think North Dakota State, I mean, we've all been waiting for them to make the jump. I think it's about time that they do it, them in Wyoming. So that just kind of leaves who's going to go to the American. No matter what, stay, go, have confidence in our leadership.
On more of a selfish note, I mean, the one thing I would love to see us go to the American is just the travel for the away games is just so much better. Just thinking about road trips, the potentially Tulane and, yeah, you know, even ECU, you know, if maybe like Coastal were to make the jump with us, you know, to Myrtle Beach, there's just so many, the road trips potentially are just so much better. You obviously have the built-in trip to Tampa every other year. So, you know, selfishly, that's what I would love to see about the American, is just because, you know, I feel like one bad thing about Conference USA, there's just so many tough places to get to and really places you even want to travel to go see a road game.
Exactly. And even if, let's say, if we do go up and UTSA and UAB joins us, I kind of feel like we as a fan base get along with, at least I do personally, with those two institutions more than any other. They do seem like the most chill, the most fun. The cities themselves are great, both Birmingham and San Antonio. Of course, both of us being Tampa Owls, we would love to, you know, go to Tampa, go to Soho the night before the game in our FAU red and blue, and then just, I don't know, crash somewhere and then head up to Ray J. I mean, that's the dream. ECU is a wonderful fan base, by the way. Remember back in the day, like 2013, when they had an insanely good offense?
Riley was the OC. Lincoln Riley was the OC for that team.
Was he really?
Yeah, that's why their offense was so good.
And well, then, they had a great quarterback in Shane Carden, and an insanely good wide receiver. They I think they still hold the record for the most like completions and yards between in a career between a single quarterback and a single receiver. I can't remember the receiver's name.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure because that right after that, Bob Stoops hired Lincoln Riley from ECU. Yeah, he was the OC from 2010 to 2013 at ECU, or 2014. So, yeah, he was the offensive coordinator for that team. So it makes sense why they were so good offensively.
Yeah, ECU, that would be a great time. Close to me as well.
Right down the street. About as close as you're going to get.
Yeah. I mean, hey, App State's hosting Marshall this Thursday. True. That's the closest FBS school, actually, to Asheville.
That's true. Yeah,
about an hour away. It's going to be about 40 degrees because we're getting a cold front the night before, but we'll see what happens. I could be heading my way to Boone and be going face to face with our favorite Marshall fan base. We'll see. Hopefully I don't get, you know, yeah. So we kind of glossed over this, but Kirk, real quick, if we're going to jump back to Air Force, winner of this game goes to the American. Yeah. Sound good.
I wouldn't want to make that bet for this game.
Same. So that being said, your prediction against the Falcons, the line opened at -7. I haven't seen any movement, but I really haven't. I checked this morning, haven't checked since. What do you think? Any predictions?
I mean, my gut says it they're just going to be a little too much, just going up into the altitude. Just Air Force, probably the best team we face. So, well, obviously not Florida, but, you know, between Georgia Southern. I want to say we give them a good fight. I'm going to throw out 31-27. We lose a close game, and depending on where the line ends up falling, I think we probably cover, but I think we end up losing a close game. Air Force ran for, I think, 600 yards this week against Utah State. Granted, I mean, I think our defense could be up for the task, so I think we'll hold them a little bit better, but I just see Air Force running probably for 300-400 yards against us this week.
Just so fans know, I mean, Utah State, they're no slouch, man. Blew out North Dakota to start the year, beat Washington State, beat Wazoo in Pullman, who just curb-stomped USC, by the way. That's a program that's in shambles over there in Los Angeles. So, and Air Force hung with them. I mean, they were winning most of the game, like you said. So, Jake and I talked about it earlier in the year. We both penned this up as a loss. I'm going to stick with that. I think we're going to have a 38-21. I'm buying that the elevation is going to be an issue this time around. I know it really wasn't that much of an issue against Wyoming, but I just got a really bad feeling about it. And I'm going to blame Pat Chun.
Yeah. Hopefully, I think this is the last game we can blame Pat Chun on. So, you know, we're done with him after this. Thank goodness.
That's right. Yes. He still has me blocked on Twitter. No idea why. If someone can tweet at him and find out for me, that'd be great. Hey, speaking of Twitter, you guys already know that this episode is going to drop Tuesday on FU Owl's Nest. You can follow them at FU Owl's Nest on Twitter. FUOwlsNest.com and our YouTube page. It will be on Spotify and Apple Podcasts Wednesday. All right, so Tuesday, FU Owl's Nest, Wednesday, everywhere else. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, by the way, at Inside the Burrow. We were tweeting a little bit during the game, including, you know, the comment that was made about us being a second half team. If you liked it, you know, that's why we talked about it. So let us know. Let us know if you guys want us to talk about anything. We love to have your input about everything that's going on, especially all of the news that's going to be coming about with conference realignment. Make sure you tag us and all of that. So that being said, from Kirk and myself, we love you guys. Thank you so much for following with us every single week. We really appreciate it. And who knows, man? We could come back 3-1.
Maybe they shock us.
Yeah, and we're gonna have to eat some crow. But if that's the case, I mean, I'll get some barbecue sauce going. I'll bring the ketchup. We'll do it happily.
Happily eat it. Absolutely, I'll eat it all day.
There you go. All right, guys. Hey, thank you so much for following. Oh, and before I forget, when it comes to conference realignment, it could be worse. It could be FIU. Okay. On that note, thank you so much, everyone, and go Owls.